Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back right on time.
On schedule. No one will ever know.
No, sure. Slightly later than usual, but...
Yeah, it's right. It's within the window.
I had a bad night's sleep, and then when I did get back to bed, I slept a little bit more, and so now I'm groggy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. I've done that. My fiance gets up at like 6:30 now, which is... You know, and as you and I, people who work at home, know, you know, oftentimes you don't necessarily have a set time to get up unless there's someone else in the house.
Yes.
You know, it's not like we have to get up for a particular work task.
Yeah, yeah. I have to get up because there's someone in my house who gets up, and that's my dog.
Right. Yep.
Who wakes me up and wants to be fed.
Dog's got to go to work.
Dog's got
to
eat.
Yeah, yeah. Before it can go to its job.
Uh-huh. Well... she's an unemployed lazy dog.
Well, her job being to presumably, you know, be your dog, I think.
Well, she's always on duty then.
That's true. That's true.
Either way, she's got to eat. She's got to take her food. So, yeah. So your girlfriend, your fiance getting up at 6:30 in the morning, is that rough for you? Bad for you? Or do you just
It's taken some adjustment. I don't usually go back to sleep, but sometimes I do have that thing where like I fall back asleep or doze for a while and then wake up and I'm groggy.
Yeah.
Usually later than I intended, right? Like I often now get up around 7 or 7:30 and sometimes I'll fall back asleep and not get up to like 8:30 or something. And then I feel like disoriented and everything. But yeah, it's taken some adjustment to like, you know, left to my own devices. I would probably go to bed around midnight and get up around 8:00. But now I'm going to bed at like 10 or 10:30 and getting up 6:30 so I can ensure that I at least sleep more than like 6 hours a night, which is, 6 hours I feel like is roughly my bare minimum for feeling like a functioning human being.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I hear you. I'm not at the bare minimum today. So everybody's freaking out about Apple.
Nothing happened this week. It was very quiet.
Very quiet. New year. And people freaking out about Apple.
New problems.
Mm-hmm.
This was an interesting development because I think this is one of those things that obviously a lot of people around Apple had been speculating about well before there was any real evidence to do so. You know, this idea that like, oh, there are fewer, you know, people are reporting in the supply chain that there's fewer iPhone shipments and et cetera, right? And like, you know, we've seen these things pretty much every year. And we always sort of take them with a grain of salt because usually Apple comes around and been like, everything was fine. We still sold a ton of iPhones. But what's unusual about this is that they actually, you know, it was so far off, like, you know, what they were going to end up bringing in revenue was so far off, they actually had to correct their guidance. And their guidance is usually, I think, as we've discussed in the past, really conservative. Not as conservative, perhaps, as it used to be, but I actually went through and ran the numbers on the last couple of years to see what the like percentages were. And they're usually pretty smack dab in the middle of whatever range they give. And then sometimes they beat it. But like over the last 8 quarters or so, they've beat it about 50% of the time, the high end of their guidance. And usually they're something like 2 to 3% above their average, like the average in their range.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're pretty good about getting like right on target. They know what they're going to make. And so it's unusual for them to have to come out and say, we were off by a substantial margin,
by a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, obviously cause for concern in some cases, but, you know, there's a question of, is this a one-time thing? Is this a trend? And I think my conclusion is generally like, you know, they expected this was going to happen, but I don't think they expected the magnitude or how soon it was going to happen or both.
Yeah, I mean, my bigger concern is not that it happened, but that they were caught unawares, right?
Right.
Like that they made those calculations. And so either this was completely unforeseen or Apple got caught up in its own kind of hype and thought that they could, you know, that they were the gravity didn't apply to them or whatever, because they were like, they completely missed here. And I would argue that, yes, they would have taken a hit if they had guided down originally, but they didn't. And now they're taking what I think is probably a bigger hit because it's a double whammy of it being a surprise as well. And the stock having gone up because of their confidence in their previous guidance. It's fascinating. Also, the China thing, right? Where they're mm-hmm. like, well, this is mostly China. And then they proceed, and in Tim Cook's interview with CNBC, same thing, right? This is mostly China, but there are all these other factors. And it's right. one of those things where I tend to believe them, that most of what's going on in this is China. But I think it's interesting that they go into lots of other factors, because right. it feels to me like the China thing is, I mean, I want to say it's kind of like a fig leaf to cover some other underlying global issues with the iPhone. But the fact that Apple actually called them all out means that the fig leaf is not covering all of it, right? Like they did make a point of saying it's not the only issue. It's a big issue here, yeah, but I feel like they're also like launching a disclaimer that it's like, we also have some global iPhone issues.
Yeah, it couldn't be. I mean, and I wrote my piece in Macworld this week is kind of going through some of this, and the chances of that, you know, at the low end, basically they're about $5 billion below their low end of their guidance. So like a conservative amount would be like, all right, they're $5 billion down. It would be hard to sort of fathom that 100% of that came from China, obviously, and we don't know what the percentage breakdowns are. I'll say the stuff that works in their favor in that regard is saying, you know, I've listened to some of the, you know, financial news and stuff like that, and there are several other companies in other sectors that are also seeing problems in China. I think FedEx, Ford, a couple other companies around there. So like, it's not an issue that's limited to them, but it is one that's hitting them particularly hard in that way. But I think you're right that like there's sort of a confluence of things going on here. I think they are still coming to terms with the upgrade cycles, people holding onto devices longer. And that's partially their own fault because, as I talk about a little bit in my piece, they've worked really hard over the past year, especially to make sure that those older phones are more viable, by doing things like offering the cheaper battery replacements and making sure that iOS 12 performs well on older phones. So that is, if anything, a disincentive for a lot of people to go out and buy a new phone, because their old phones now work as well, if not better, than they did before. And none of that's to say they'll work, you know, an iPhone 6 will work as well as an iPhone 10. They don't. My fiance has an iPhone 6. It is noticeably more sluggish than an iPhone 10, but it works well enough for her. And yeah, this is anecdotal, but I think the fact that Apple devoted so much energy and resources to increasing the longevity of its older products, as it has done in the past with its Macs as well, works against them. I'm not sure if they didn't expect it to work against them on quite so large a scale, or they felt like the shininess of the newer phones would overpower the fact that the old phones work well.
Yeah, the whole battery thing as a way to cover up a bad PR issue also served as an education that you can just take your phone to Apple and get the battery replaced and yep. keep using it. And it's all, you know, but all this stuff is not, I mean, so I wrote a piece about this at Tom's Guide and basically said, this is not a surprise. Like, China is a surprise, but the rest of it is not a surprise. And it is the fact that everybody's got a smartphone now. It's just like when everybody bought an HD TV. Yeah. Okay, that's over now. Everybody's got one.
It's commoditized.
That inflationary period is gone. Like, it's now going to just be kind of like a replacement cycle, and that's a lot less. And smartphones have gotten there where we're out of the inflationary period, and that's just how it is. And yep. unless you know, there's a market for iPhones on the moon, they're just like they've run out of places to really rapidly right. expand, especially with their business model, and that's fine. Like, so, you know, the because the fact is, owning a big chunk of the smartphone market is an amazing annuity. It is incredibly profitable, and Apple is going to be making, you know, billions of dollars on iPhones for the foreseeable future. But that is not a place that is going to accelerate. In fact, it's going to decelerate a little bit, but it's also not going to go away because people aren't going to stop buying smartphones. So you got to tend that garden because it's going to be worth a lot of money. But if you're a growth-focused person, which if you're a user of the technology, you don't really care, quite honestly. But if you're an investor, you do, which is why the investor narrative drives so much of this. If you're a growth-focused person, it's not great because you're like, where is Apple going next? Which is why in January of, 2016, Apple started talking about their services and the growth of services and broke out services and did an appendix in their results to say, look at how great services are going to be. So like they've been laying the ground. They knew this was coming for, you know, 3 years at least now. They have been, it's obvious because it has to. They're going to run out and they're not going to replace it. And this is why, so here's the thing where I kind of put the cart before the horse, except I think it's not, which is, this is why the iPhone has been so weird the last couple of years. This is why they've tried new models and tried new pricing, is Apple is shifting into this different mode, which is like, what's the best way for us to price our products to maximize revenue in a world where people are going to buy smartphones less often? And so what I've heard this week, because this happens when there's any news like this, which is everybody has got their pet gripe about Apple, and they bring it up and they say, see, this is the reason that happened, which is like, unless you're an iPhone buyer in China, I don't think that's the reason.
unless you're like a million iPhone buyers in China.
Right. But what I'll say is, I'm not sure that iPhone sales sluggishness is because the prices are higher. I kind of think maybe the prices are higher because Apple knows the cycle is diminishing. Now, I wrote a whole piece at Macworld this week about how I think that Apple needs to do a better job with the iPhone product line in 2019, how they need to have options that are good and new that are lower priced than the XR, which is their lowest priced new model right now, how they probably push the prices too high, and they need to dial those back. Although, again, they don't really care that people don't like the prices. They care if the prices are so high that they lose revenue because they turn off enough sales that the increased revenue cannot make up for it. That's the math of it. That's what they're playing for. But I do feel like they're you know, they maybe missed the shot a little bit. But I also feel like, you know, if you're selling a product that people are only going to buy every 4 or 5 years, you want to sell them a $1,000 product, not a $500 product, and then they'll use it for 5 years. And you want to do something that got called out as Apple's panic move about like the XR having that $499 or whatever with trade in. But I feel like that's part of this story too, right? Is that Tim Cook even said, we're trying to do installment plans, you know, where you pay a monthly fee, like in the old days on your carrier, or trade-in plans. And it's going to be more like buying a car where, you know, you're going to keep it longer, and some people will run it into the ground, and other people will go 2 years and then trade it in and get a new one. And I think these are connected, and I don't think they're necessarily connected in the way people are playing it as, which is like, oh, well, they raised the prices, no wonder people stop buying iPhones, because I don't think that's really what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some interesting questions about sort of the price value curve as well. Granted, as we've discussed before, it's not the XS was not necessarily pushed out as a, you know, an upgrade path for somebody necessarily on a 10, right?
Like, sure.
The incremental improvements there were small enough that, like, you know, unless you're someone like us who works in an industry where you are like, I should have this so I can write about it or what have you, or you're someone who really wants the latest and greatest, there really doesn't make as much sense. But the narrative in the past has often felt like a treadmill upgrade thing, especially with things like the upgrade programs or the upgrade programs the carriers have offered, where it felt more in the recent few years, especially with the demise of the sort of carrier subsidies or two-year contracts, that, you know, people were trying to encourage people to upgrade more often. And sure, that's good for Apple and other companies that make their money off that. But as you said, I think that cycle is lengthening. I will be interested to see how it affects things like the upgrade plan, if it does, because, you know, I think as someone who did go from a 10 to 10S, I kind of was like, I mean, certainly if I'd had a 10 and bought it outright, I don't think I would have bought a 10S, certainly. But sure, like on the upgrade plan, it actually was not a huge hit to do so. But the playing around with the different levels of things, I think that's intriguing. I especially, you know, we've talked a lot about things like the SE before and the market for smaller phones. Is that still a thing, a going concern? Maybe. I mean, there is an argument, at least in some places, for if you just want to goose growth of your unit sales, then yes, there are probably more form factors or price points you could get into, but not does not translate to a growth in revenue necessarily, because if you're making a cheaper phone, even if you're selling more of them, you may not exceed the revenue you'd make by selling fewer, more expensive phones. And I think you retweeted, and I then retweeted after I saw you retweeted the thread by Steven Sanofsky,
yeah,
talking about the challenges of pricing, which is a really, really interesting look into, you know, how companies think about this. And again, your point about people sort of they're having their axes to grind, it's not they're not idiots, right? Like the people at Apple are not totally, like, you know, they're not stupid. They spend a lot of time. This is their job. They spend a lot of time thinking about how to price these products.
Yeah, there are a lot of people out there who think that they think about Apple pricing for 10 minutes and that they've done more work than Apple has, which is just, I get it. I get why people think that, but yeah, that's not what happens. Yeah, they think about it a lot. You may not agree with their decisions, but they are thinking about it. And thinking about it hard.
And there are many people thinking about it, you know, all the way probably up to the top of the chain there. So, you know, these things like the trade-ins and incentives, you know, I agree with your perspective. They're trying things out to see kind of what works because they realize the market's changing. And it's not a coincidence that they decided to stop reporting unit sales on the iPhone, as we talked about previously. Again, I don't think that they expected it to turn around and be an issue quite so quickly, but they didn't want that to be a distraction because they knew it was going to level off. And so it's interesting as a perspective now, because when this rolls around at the end of the month and we get the next quarter's financial results, there, you know, we don't really know what the iPhone sales looks like other than making some very rough calculations, which are harder to do when you don't have as many numbers. But, you know, like you said, they're still going to be selling billions of them over time. Yeah. And that's just it's starting. The platform has matured a lot. You know, it's starting perhaps to look more like the Mac does now, not in the terms of the overall sales volume, but in terms of where the platform is.
What I was going to say is, think about Microsoft from the mid-90s to today, when the PC market got really boring. Microsoft still made and makes huge amounts of money off of a boring, static PC market.
Yeah.
They're being in a place... being in a large market that's not growing but is not really shrinking or not shrinking much, and owning a giant chunk and a profitable chunk, owning a huge profit share in that market, like, it's just money. You get huge amounts of money every single quarter as long as you keep making products people want to buy when it's time to buy. That is the game. And you know, if you're a stock market person, the game is finding new people, but in this market you're not going to find new people. In this market you just want to maintain while you use that money to fund whatever you're doing in some other area. So it's, yeah, a lot of freaking out. I do think it goes beyond China, as you said, and that there's more for Apple to do here. I think that perhaps I think I'm going to take from the fact that Apple didn't just say this is about China as an acknowledgement that Apple is aware that it has wider iPhone issues that it has to address. So I read between the lines there as this is Apple going, yeah, we got work to do. And if you look at that CNBC interview, I mean, Tim Cook lays it all out there, like, you know, we need to do a better job with our upgrade plans and our payment plans and our rebates and, you know, communicating, because that's the other truth is, you know, people are like, I don't want to buy a $1,000 phone every year. It's like, well, first off, almost nobody buys a new phone every year. And second, if you buy a new phone every year, you're turning in your old phone, which is going to get you hundreds and hundreds of dollars in turn-in credit. And then you're not spending $1,000 a year, right? Like, it's not a real scenario. But that said, I think the sticker shock is real. And Apple failing to make products... Two things. Apple failing to make a product that is kind of a mainstream product at a mainstream price, that which the XS is basically their mainstream product, and it's $999. The XR, because it's larger, I mean, they wanted it to be kind of mainstream, but it is a big phone.
Yeah.
And then that's at the $749 price. So they lost their iPhone 7 price, basically, for a new phone. It doesn't exist. I think that's a problem. And I think the other problem, and I'm not, they're the ones who have the research on this, but I've heard from people who say that part of the impediment of having two sets of phones is that there are people who want the new iPhone because it's the best, and they're not going to buy in the $700, $600 tier because it doesn't seem cool. The $1,000 phone is cool, but it's too expensive. And, you know, it strikes me that there are missing pieces in this strategy, and that they've kind of like turned off potential upgraders, because that's at this point, that's who it is. It's potential upgraders,
right,
with the offerings that they currently have. So, you know, I think there's more to be done here than just make it clearer that you can buy this on an installment plan, right? I think there are some things. I honestly keep coming back to the fact that I am more and more shocked all the time that Apple didn't take the iPhone X and make it less. That was that move of like, you can't even consider getting that phone for less than $1,000. We won't let you buy the iPhone X anymore.
Yeah, like, and I can see why they decided, like,
totally.
That phone
costs a lot. The margins on that, I mean, that's an expensive phone to make, the XS.
And that was the challenge that is also the challenge they made this year in terms of getting to the XS was, can you sell last year's phone at a cheaper price and not have everybody flock to that because the improvements in the XS don't necessarily seem like a big deal, right? Like, that's tricky. And in some ways, they back themselves into that corner because they pushed the 10 so far ahead last year in terms of jumping from the 8 to the 10. Like, you know, they skipped the whole 9 there. No, but they pushed so far forward with the 10 that I think they kind of hit the top of the curve in terms of what they could produce at scale. And so when it came time to do the 10S, like, it obviously was not going to be like the quantum jump that the 10 was, right? They weren't going to go from the 10 to the 12 in the next year, because simply put, like, they had already pushed the envelope so far. And I think that's what made the 10, I think, very successful in its first year, because it felt very distinct from where the rest of the line was going. But now that the entire line is there, it kind of has like hit this slight plateau again. And so I agree with you. I'm fascinated to see what they do with this year's lineup, because, like you said, they are aware of these challenges. And I think that's part of what a lot of people have kind of picked on certain parts of Tim Cook's letter. And fine, it might have not been as eloquent or sharp to the point as Steve Jobs has been in the past, but we're also not used to an Apple that is quite so communicative, right? Like, Tim Cook is a far more like, let me just lay out all the reasons for you. And acknowledging that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a problem. We're just not used to Apple telling us that they know they have a problem, right? Like, in a more traditional, like 10 years ago, we would have seen them change something when it came to this year's lineup, but we wouldn't have been told beforehand, like, okay, we know we have some work to do. They just would have quietly been like, internally, we know we have some work to do. We're just not going to broadcast that fact.
Right.
So it's also dealing with that sort of change in the company's MO that I think is has gotten them jumped on a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What a world we live in. It will be fascinating to see. I keep going back also to when the rumors about the iPhone X first came out. So in 2017, I remember on Upgrade talking to Mike about how I thought that it was really interesting, the idea that Apple would be so risky in trying weird things out of their comfort zone with their most important product. And, you know, just that's what they've been doing the last 2 years. This is all part of one large story about how Apple adapts to a world where the iPhone is no longer expanding, and they're maintaining an existing install base instead. And they have made some bold moves in moving in selling that iPhone X when they could have just rested for a year probably on the iPhone 8, and in doing the XR and in pricing it the way they have. And, you know, I think the conventional wisdom is it hasn't really worked out for them. The way that they had expected, and that maybe they have suppressed demand more than they thought they were going to. And maybe the battery story plays into that a little bit. But I don't know. The fact is they're going to do it again, right? So we'll see what happens next.
Yeah.
My wish list is a new SE, something that can fill that is a new tech phone with that fills a lower price slot would be nice. But who knows whether they'll cut prices. Somebody pointed out, the first iPhone was too expensive and they just cut the price by $100. That could happen. They could just cut the price on the iPhones in 6 months or something. Like, they could do it. So who knows?
That made people really angry last time around.
It did.
Yeah, the SE challenge is particularly interesting, I think, because the question is, what worked for the SE was essentially they just took newer components and put them in a chassis that they already knew how to build really well because they had built millions of them. That's a little more challenging now because you could take something and put it in the iPhone 8 chassis, as it were, without too much trouble because, again, they've made millions of models of phones in that style. But what's appealing about that is not necessarily what's appealing about the SE in part is also its small, compact size. So
Right. Either
they have to stick with that form factor as previously designed, or they have to design a brand new phone that's a small form factor, which is, I think, a whole separate issue. Because like you said, they're trying out a bunch of different stuff. But then you run into this battle of people being like, well, if it's a new phone in a smaller package, like maybe in a totally redesigned small package, maybe I still want that even over the big flagship $1,000 phone. It depends on how the balance of features and prices all works out, and that could very well be something that they play with. But it's an interesting position to be in because, yeah, like you said, the growth thing is interesting in terms of there's no new customers, as you pointed out. I think you basically are down to two people. You are down to people who are upgrading, and then people who have never owned a phone before, which is kids, right? appropriately, probably parents buying phones for kids. And in a lot of those cases, they're getting hand-me-down phones as the adults get new phones. But it's not as though you were going to suddenly have aliens arrive and be like, we've decided we all want to buy iPhones.
Yeah, well, we will watch. 2019 going to be an interesting year. Interesting year.
It's already, so we're only 4 days in, and it's already pretty interesting.
Yeah. Anything else before we go? We did our favorites. People should check out the favorites thing. Favorites
people,
are there. There's lots of them.
A fan. Yeah, we kind of also expanded on every year. I think we play around with our format and how we're going to run that down. And this year we just sort of did a variety of categories, and a lot of our stuff is not technical because in part I think our lives are dominated by so many other different things these days. So we did books, we did movies, we did games. I did tea at one point because I was like, oh, I've drank some good tea.
Yeah, that made me laugh. I want to try that tea though. That tea sounds interesting.
It's good. It's very good. I highly recommend it.
We have a visitor to the Secret Podcast, so hooray to those who heard the cat. The cat was here. He seems to be leaving now. Yeah, that was good. I was tickled. You wrote yours first, and then I just kind of filled mine in around yours, and that was a fun thing. I was doing that within a day or so of when I did the upgradees, so I was right. I ended up putting a thing at the top that's there aren't a lot of tech picks here. I was do I write up the iPad Pro? And I'm I'm not going to do that. I gave it my favorite whatever on the upgradees on upgrade, so that's enough. But it was fun to call out other things, and it's funny too that off brand stuff sometimes gets great responses. Mike and I both praised. I didn't realize Mike had started watching Patriot, and loved it, and so he and I praised Patriot, the TV show on Amazon, on upgrade, and I've gotten a bunch of tweets from people who are like, oh, I'm watching it. It's so great. It's it's great. That's a show that nobody ever heard of. It's got a terrible title because it should be called Sad Spies. And I love it. So I'm happy that other people found that. But it's funny that that's the one that, it's stuff like that. I heard from a couple of people who say, I always like to get your book picks because they give me, we read lots of books. Some people don't read so many books, but they'll take our recommendations and go chase them down. And that's cool, too.
Yeah, it was interesting, too, because I kind of racked my brain. At one point, I was like, oh, I should pick out some favorite apps of the year. And I really racked my brain to try and find some favorite apps of the year and realized I feel like I largely use the same apps that I've been using for the last couple of years. Like, I download lots of apps, but very few of them are things that I actually stick with or really like. And oftentimes, even the ones I do are simply because they're like things I use once in a while for something I own, you know, oftentimes like works with like one piece of hardware that I own, and that's really useful, but it's not like a good pick for like, this is a great app. It's like, no, I need to use this app for this stupid thing.
Yep.
So that's always an interesting challenge, is just figuring out like what parts of technology are things that I use in my daily life that I really love and really want to recommend to other people. And I actually had a couple pieces of hardware that I bought this year that I felt like, oh, that's a new piece of hardware I got this year. Would I recommend that? And thought, no, I would not recommend that. But I'm not going to write my least favorites of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. What did I do? There are a couple things that I want to write about that I haven't written about. So I didn't list them because I'm like, I'm going to save that. I've got a couple pieces of tech that I've gotten in the last month that I want to write about. So I just get those off the list. We'll get to them. We'll get to them later.
We'll make it.
All right. Well, I think that's enough for episode one of 2019. We'll be back next Friday with more because, you know, it's the Secret Podcast and we're on a schedule now.
Here we are. We're sticking around.
Yeah. Like sellouts. We're... yeah. All right. Thanks to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors. We appreciate you. And don't forget to there's a newsletter. We sent out a newsletter too, so check that out if you haven't. There's the Slack group. See a lot of you in there, which is great. And until next time, I'm gonna go take a nap now. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.